This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, welcome back inside the War Zone. It is the Wrestling War Zone, Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, episode number 11. Chad Campbell, how are you doing here tonight?
Doing good, doing good. How are you doing?
Not bad, not bad. It's been a while, but it's always good to talk to you. Hopefully everyone enjoyed our episode last week, taking a look at the go-home for the show we're talking about tonight, and of course the fallout from Nero's 4. But tonight we're talking solely WCW, Chad, because it is Halloween Havoc 1995, our second WCW pay-per-view since we started this project.
Yes, I'm looking forward to this one. But now before we get into that, I have I need your opinion on a certain matter.
Okay.
So there's a text conversation with me and my coworkers. It's a group text.
Okay.
The dynamics of the group are: it's me, you know, married, two kids.
Mm-hmm.
We have a 32-year-old Iranian.
Okay.
Who, if you've ever seen the show Stars of Sunset, like it's like that. Really gaudy, you know. Very wears like Prada sunglasses. Lives up the gimmick. So we have him. We have a Indian, we have a Mexican, and then we have a Korean American. So quite the melting pot in this text group.
And then you, as white as it fucking
gets.
And
then me, the southern hillbilly. So this text group is like, if I ever become important one day, somebody's going to dig up this text group.
Right.
And
you'll be apologizing.
This is going to be my Trump moment.
I'm not looking forward to having to delete all these podcast episodes because we had to scrub you from the site.
This comes out of the woodwork. But so tonight I was just sitting here and all of a sudden, a Pakistan guy, former coworker, is also still in the group, and he's a mess. Like he is he's hilarious, but he's like a lovable goof. Okay, so he's dating this girl, and he always tells us about his perils in dating. So he just texts us tonight, you know, we were talking about whatever, eating chicken wings or whatever, and he says, "Yo, serious question," and this is where I need your opinion on the matter. He says, "Is it considered cheating if you go on a date with another girl but don't actually sleep with her or have any intent to? Man, I'm about to go on a date with this really hot makeup artist in Atlanta. It's like I can't say no, but I want to, but I don't want to tell my girl."
So why is it a date?
That was a question I had too. But then, so somebody responded, because we never, like, he's not Facebook official with this girl. He's dating or whatever in Dallas. So we were kind of like, well, is the girl you're with now considered your girlfriend, or did you never define the relationship? And he says, "Oh no, we're girlfriend boyfriend, but I slid into this other girl's DMs and she wants to hang out." And so that's when I said, well, yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's cheating.
Well, I mean, do you want the PC answer, or do you want like the guy, like, you know, the answer? Like, to me, how long have they been together? How long has he been with this kid?
Probably like 8 months. Okay. Like not a huge amount of time. But
are they living together?
No.
Okay. So go on the hangout. and see if there's anything there. Because like you might as well find out now. Because there's going to be a what if that's going to hang over this guy's head if he doesn't. Now, unless he's dead serious with this other girl and he's going to marry her or move in with, you know, like, then say no. But if it's just a dating thing and he's not sure if that's the, you know, and you got to find out. Because if you don't find out, it's almost worse. You know what I mean? Now, should he tell her? Probably not. I mean, if it ends up being innocent, but you got to be smart about it. So anyway, that's my like non, you know, married guy PC answer. But
yeah,
my PC answer is don't do it. But
right.
But I think he'll live with regret if he does. If he doesn't.
Yeah, though that's exactly what the Korean guy says. He says, you know, you probably shouldn't, but I don't see what's wrong with hanging out with a friend, you know. And he says, yeah, it's like a first date type thing. I just got to keep my options open. She might find me unattractive, so who knows? Or maybe we ain't compatible.
He's just going to do it. If he's already talking like this.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's definitely going to do it. He's just wanting vindication.
Yeah.
And this guy is one of those where, like, you know, he thinks he's like a 10 on the on the spectrum. So he definitely overestimates his ability. But yeah, so he ended the conversation, says, I'll just live with the guilt. So, we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, quite the, interesting conversation that just came over on the text. I live my life vicariously through them a lot of times. Cause, this same guy, he'll like text me all the time at 3 o'clock in the morning, just hammered. And, pretty hilarious. He never really grew up. Like he's actually 8 months older than me.
Right.
But he still acts like he's in college, like a 22-year-old. His job now, he travels a lot, so he lives high off the hog when he travels and gets a nice per diem. So there's always something going on. So we'll see. Maybe next episode I can update on.
Yeah,
his,
I
love wife.
Everyone will be on pins and needles. Yeah, so I'm currently I'm living vicariously through you because your car works. a couple weeks ago, right after, you know, I mentioned the DirecTV fiasco a week ago, and right after DirecTV came, I went to the mall to do the Cox thing, like I talked about last week, and I get home and I go to check my car because the night before, my wife and I had gone to Foxwoods for a date night. And when we're leaving Foxwoods, I put the nav on. I mean, I pretty much know the way, but it's a little tricky. It's a very dark area, like getting to the highway. But it has us like, it's not picking up where we are. So I'm just thinking, oh, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere. But then it stayed that way. Like it wouldn't recognize where we were. It just kept having us driving in a circle, like around Foxwoods, like through a lake. Like, it just kept showing us. Like, and I like how it just lets us do it. Like it wasn't warning us that you're driving through water or anything. It just shows you driving through water. So I said, "All right,
I'll try." Like Michael Scott.
Yeah, basically, right. I'm trying putting my faith in the machine. So I let the car sit overnight, figuring, all right, let it reboot overnight, and in the morning it'll be fine. But in the morning it wasn't. So I call Uconnect. I have a Jeep, so I call Uconnect that like kind of oversees like the middle console. It has like the radio and the GPS and all that, the apps and all that stuff. And the lady's like, "Oh, okay, you just need to run an update, and you can download the update from our website on a flash drive, put it into your car, and." You'll be good to go. So I do that, and it freezes halfway through. Pull it out, put it back in, freezes halfway through. So I call, and she's like, yeah, you know, she has me try a couple things. She's like, yeah, you're going to have to go get it looked at. I'm like, well, what the fuck? So now the middle console, like the screen just keeps alternating between like this gray screen and a black screen, like that's trying to boot the update. Like it just keeps saying like reboot, reboot, you know, and it keeps flashing through these two screens. So the soonest appointment they could get, now this was – whatever, two Saturdays ago, I think. Two Saturdays ago. The soonest I could get was last, like, whatever. It was like 8 days later or 10 days later. So I'm like, fine. I don't have to use the car. Or I can use it. I don't need the radio or anything like that. So I take the car to work. I just listen on my phone to, like, podcasts, you know, like, with no radio. I'm okay. We go to New Hampshire for a few days, like I talked about last week as well. And I get back, and I'm like, let me just try and start the car. And now the key fob isn't working. The car won't unlock. It won't turn on. And I'm thinking, like, the key fob, like, lost connection or something. So now I'm like, what the fuck? Because I can't drive the car to the dealer on Tuesday for the fucking appointment. So I spent all day, all morning Monday going back and forth between Uconnect, the dealer, trying to figure out what's going on. I'm trying to get an explanation if they're going to be paying for this or if I'm going to get stuck with it. So I'm trying to call the dealer where I bought the car because I'm taking it to a different one that had a sooner appointment. They changed ownership in May. So the guy I usually work with is gone. they can't open up the computer to check my extended warranty. So I'm just like losing my fucking mind. So I finally find the warranty paperwork. My wife tracks it down, and the warranty was up in May. I had done the 5 years. So that ended, of course, 2 months ago. And the lady, so in all the meantime of all this, the case manager assigned, like, won't, like, I can't get in touch with her for my thing, for the Uconnect. So, like, I'm going back and forth. I'm calling her. I'm not getting an answer. So finally I call, and I just, like, anyone I can get from Uconnect, I talk to. And I'm like, can just someone tell me if, like, this is paid for? I want to know. And they're like, well, we can't tell you until, like, they confirm that it's our fault. I'm like, it is your fault. How is it not your fault? Like, how in any fucking world is this not your fault? I'm like, you told me to run the update, and it crippled my car. I'm like, it's very clearly your fucking fault. So, like, no, we know it probably is. But until they say it is, we can't say we're going to pay. I'm like, fine, whatever. So now they say, oh, we can give you the number for our tow company. But they can't cover the tow because they don't know yet if it's on them, right? So,
oh, God.
Like, we can reimburse you. So I'm like, well, fuck you. So I called the Jeep one, and it's like $100 to tow it. So I called AAA, and it was going to be $30. So I'm like, fine. If I got to pay the 30, I'll pay the 30. So I'm at work while all this is going on. So my wife is, like, dealing with the kids and dealing with all this stuff. And so AAA comes, and the guy's like, he goes, no, I don't think there's a problem with the key fob. But he goes, I think the battery's dead because of the fucking, which is what I had feared originally. And that's why I tried to turn the car on when I got back from vacation. I don't know why it didn't cross my mind that it would be the battery. But so anyway, he said the battery's dead. So he used all of his emergency battery, like, to get mine jumped, basically. But he said the alternator was fine. He's like, the battery just drained. So my dad came over. He drove the Jeep to the dealer. And of course, so they look at it this morning, and she's like, yeah, it was just about the – she's like, it was definitely the update. She's like, you know, it basically killed the radio, like the whole middle thing. So they have to replace it completely. So no, she can't get a hold of the fucking case manager, of course. So she's like, she's like, I need to get authorization that they're going to pay for it before I order the part. And so now, like, we're wasting hours. Like, I just want to get my fucking car. So she finally gets a hold of her. They call me back, and they're like, yeah, we got the authorization. They're going to pay for the whole thing. And then I called the case manager. She actually answered this time, or called me right back like 2 minutes later. And they're going to pay for the battery as well because they killed the battery. So, but it's going to be like probably 3 or 4 days before I get the car back. So that kind of sucks. And I'm guessing not weekend, so whatever. So anyway, pain in the ass in my life that I've been dealing with.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. It's been 5 years since you got that car, because I remember we were, you know, chatting when you bought it.
Yeah, I got it right before Scott's surprise 40th.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I'm like, ah, damn. We've been talking for 5 years. It's kind of crazy. I was right when I was being accused of being in a heavy bromance with you, Jennifer.
That's true.
Hot and heavy the first few months.
Yeah, like any relationship, you know, and now we're still close. It's just, you know, the passion's not quite there, but.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking, like, I think, like, and don't forget too, we weren't podcasting or doing other shit like every night at that point. We were just like, I was just recording with Scott, like, whatever, once or twice a week. And
right.
So we were more of like just sitting around. So we were talking on Facebook for like 3 hours every night, I think.
Didn't have a conglomerate that we were running and operating at that point. Only had one kid too, between two of us.
That's right.
Now, so now we got four between us.
Well, it's good. We get to know each other real well. So.
Yeah. There we go. So I guess we can jump in to this pay-per-view. Now, so this is Halloween Havoc. Took place at the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit on October 29th. Was Jordan Duncan, did he go to this one? Do you know?
He'll tell you he did, even if he didn't, so whatever.
Well, and I mean, he'll never listen to confirm either way, so there we go. This will be his ultimate test. If he listens and lets us know, then we know. We'll keep him on the staff if he lets us know.
Either way?
This is his mid-year evaluation.
Yeah.
What's your kind of relationship with this show?
I mean, it's 95, so I dig it. Obviously, like, the 95 pay-per-views, I had all of them pretty much on tape. I ordered the WWF, got the WCW from Jim, who had the black box. I had seen this a bunch. Yeah, I mean, yes, my relationship is strong with it.
Like, I know this one was pretty heavily rented on VHS. Yeah. I mean, I always loved the Halloween Havocs just because of the theme. I really don't understand why WWE doesn't bring that theme over. Because right. I think it's just such a great theme. I mean, of all, WCW had some pretty good theme pay-per-views, but I mean, Havoc is just
It's a great
the
one.
Absolute best, in my opinion. And this seems like kind of a weird show where I would say, like, in retrospect, like, it seems like kind of weirdly a lot of people are sort of nostalgic for this one, like in our community and overall, like, I don't know. It just seems like the type of show where,
well, it kind of hits the target because it's got, like, a lot of us are grew up around the same age, right? So it's kind of in the wheelhouse. We're 15, 14, 16, whatever. 30 for Scott. And then
9
like,
for me.
So you got some of that. Not even born if you're Logan Crosland. So, you got a bunch of that. And you have, like, it's got absurdity and insanity, which is attractive to people from a WCW perspective. But it also has some really good stuff, too. Like, the Horseman stuff is pretty legendary. It's got the monster truck, which is absurd. So there's a lot of fun stuff. And I actually watched this. I guess we'll talk about it. I mean, I watched it a bit ago, so I don't remember exactly. But my son, who's 3 and a half, was, like, refusing to go to bed the night I was watching this. So he watched Hogan Giant with me, and he was getting pretty into it. And he made me laugh because he was like, why is Hulk Hogan, like, acting bad or something, he was saying or whatever. Like, even he's picking up on it. You know what I mean? Like, so that was making me laugh. But I actually kind of regretted. I think I was just annoyed because he was, like, fighting going to bed. I regretted not going back and letting him watch the monster truck part because he's a monster truck fan. So I feel like I have to watch that with him at some point. But, you know, he was into the main event. So I was like, all right, even he's getting into this one. So
there you go. Dad? Quick side note, did I tell you that Caden was watching with me when I watched Uncensored and when Flair comes out dressed as a woman?
I don't know if you said that in the chat or not.
Yeah, because he when he jumps the rail, Caden's like, who's that? And then when he takes off the wig, he knows Ric Flair from the wrestling figure.
Right.
So he was like, why is he dressed like a woman? I was like, well, he's trying to surprise the other guys and trick them. And he was like, he's an ugly girl. I was like, well.
Very true.
Had the spot on analysis there, but yeah, it was humorous. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think this has, like, enough camp and good stuff that it hits that sweet spot. But I mean, we'll get into it. I guess I can give sort of my overarching thoughts now. But I don't know if I'm quite as high. Like, I feel like I'm a WCW homer sometimes. But I may not quite be as high or nostalgic on this show as even some. Because, I mean, something like Halloween Havoc 91.
Right.
To me, is my sweet spot of that kind of mixture with the Chamber of Horrors and the other stuff than this does. But we can get into it as
well. There's a difference, too, right? There's a memory of a show and then actually watching the full show. So, like, the memory may be nostalgic to a lot of people. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how many of them actually sit and, like, watch every match of every show.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, with this one, you can always say, like, oh, well, just watch the Horseman stuff and the Eddie and the Monster Truck. And you get the general gist, but... there was a lot going on. So we get a kind of cheesy opening, Halloween theme. Tony was not dressed up scaring kids, but, you know, get the spooky theme. And our hosts are just Tony and Bobby tonight.
Yeah.
I thought the set looked cool with the house and the gravestones. I mean, they always did a good job dressing up the Halloween Havoc set, except for the year when it was that big pumpkin.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they lost it a little bit in the last couple of years, but up until then, they did a great job dressing up the set for Havoc.
We get the clips of the monster trucks revving as well.
We do. They're revving up, basically kind of showing their cocks to each other outside as they're circling around, revving up with some great shots inside the cockpit of Hogan and Giant.
I wonder if Giant got out of the cockpit to talk to Bobby Heenan.
So that was interesting to see.
Yeah.
I thought they both looked pretty ridiculous. It was dumb, monster trucks. So.
And then we find out that Pillman and Arn Anderson have attacked Ric Flair backstage. Right, so that's the big breaking news.
That's kind of our. That was probably the big news leading in from main event. I guess was probably that.
Yeah,
happening.
I would think so. Yeah.
And that leads us right to our first match, which is for the TV title. And it is Johnny B. Bad versus Diamond Dallas Page. We get a video package with the angle so far. We see that great clip where, you know, Bad, I'm all four tires or whatever.
I said, flat tire.
Yeah. So we get that. And Paige is in his Halloween gear tonight.
Yeah, I like those, black and orange. Yeah.
Black and orange with the diamond in the middle. So it was gaudy, but a little better.
Well, if it's Paige, I mean, he's gaudy.
Yeah, so. That's true. Johnny B. Bad fakes out Dallas to start the match, where a fake Johnny B. Bad comes out in the entranceway, turns around, but the real Johnny B. Bad comes in from the other side and takes over. I thought Johnny B. Bad had a pretty hot start, but then he slows things down with an arm bar. DDP takes over. He has a pretty long segment on top. I didn't think he did a lot of really interesting stuff on top. It wasn't very focused.
Right.
I mean, it was fine, but not too extraordinary by any means. Mm-hmm. I thought the best portions were the cutoffs of the hope spots,
right,
with the clothesline and the boot to the head that DDP did. It was pretty vicious. Then he gets a nice power slam for two. Max Muscle's all over this match, where he distracts the ref when DDP uses a choke with a chain. And then Bad starts making his comeback with a back suplex and head scissors, and the crowd starts getting back into the action. And then we get into the kind of ending of the match, which I thought elevated it a lot, where Bad hits a double axe handle. The Diamond Doll gives Bad a 10, which got a big pop.
Yeah, because even before that, she kept kind of like
grimacing
and giving grace to Paige when he'd call for him. So.
Right. So that was a fun spot. A wild power bomb gets the two for Bad. He goes for a hip toss, but Dallas floats over into DDT, which was really smooth for Dallas at this point in time. He goes for the diamond cutter, but that gets blocked, and then DDP gets dumped on the outside, and Bad dives on both him and Muscle. Bad Day back inside the ring gets a two.
That was a good fall, too. I like that one.
That was Bad drop kicks Dallas into Max Muscle, and he gets two on the roll up, and Tony at this point is just losing his shit. He's like, it's two. It's SummerSlam 89 levels already. Muscle again tries to clothesline Bad, but Bad hits the KO punch on Max, who was kind of out of position, so that didn't look great. He didn't hit him flush, but that gets Max Muscle out of the way, and then Bad pins Dallas and wins the TV title. So, you know, I thought this was a longish match, too. I think it went 17 minutes when I looked it up. You know, first 10 minutes, I'd say, were nothing special at all, but the back half was really good.
Yeah.
So overall, I thought this was a good opener. I ended up going 3 stars on it.
Yeah, I went 3 as well. It's been a good feud brewing. Like, it's a good spot for both men. I like the beginning fake out with the fake Johnny B. Bad. It kind of plays into the Halloween theme. You know, Tony, of course, talks about Hogan and Giant through a bunch of this. I like the stuff with the signs, too, because Kimberly's getting more and more aggravated with Paige and kind of playing up the Bad. That'll, you know, we'll see more of that as we go along. And I love the near fall on the Bad Day. Tony talks a lot about Paige working hard to develop his game, so that was cool. And then, yeah, the payoff of Bad winning after Paige fucked him out of the title match with Sting after the fall brawl stuff. So I thought this was a good payoff. Bad gets the win. And, yeah, the crowd got rocking. I like this a lot. Like, you know, we'll see as Bad develops into 96 and then eventually jumps. But, you know, Paige is working hard. He's getting there. And we'll see more and more as we go.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing signs of life from Dallas. I mean, I don't think he could have done like that float over DDT spot.
Definitely not.
Even like a year or two before. Right. So he's improving. So then I don't think we had anything backstage. We go kind of straight into our second match of the night, which is and what a match it is. We get the Zodiac subbing for Kamala, which now I didn't read the Observer, but I mean, Kamala's gone. So
Bobby shits out him. Bobby says he was scared and Sullivan beat him up and sent the pack. So they pretty much dump all over him.
So they dump all over him. Now, I don't know if this was original. I couldn't remember, but Zodiac comes out to Dean Malenko's music. That dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Oh, yeah, that was weird. I didn't even notice that. I wonder if they dubbed him in.
That's what I was wondering. Maybe somebody can confirm that, whether that was
Or they fucked up and played the wrong song instead of the Dungeon of Doom song.
Hopefully not, but I was wondering if that was like Zodiac's real music or if he had something that he just dubbed over on the network.
No, I think he just always uses the Dungeon of Doom music.
That the laughing or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, but this was interesting. The match starts out and a fan runs in And now why he could possibly care to pick this match as his time to make a move, but he does, and it's like they
figured no
one
was paying attention to watch it, so it's the
start. Well,
they
really didn't, because like Randy Anderson like takes care of him, but it took Dillinger and company like forever to come freaking get him. I mean, he kind of looked like a wrestler. He looked a little bit like Chris Jericho. He had long hair like that, and I mean it was like 15 or 20 seconds. I was like, get in the fucking ring and take this guy out, please. So that was probably the most exciting moment of this match. And then they go to the outside. I noticed Capetta is on the phone, and we actually got Burning Spirits, friend of the show, tweeted Gary Michael Capetta and asked him what he was doing on that headset. Now Capetta said he wasn't talking. He was listening to directions from the back. I mean, that's a lie, because there's plenty of clips of Capetta talking to somebody's ear off back there. But yeah, I mean, that seems to be what we thought, where he was getting cues and was kind of like the middleman in the back. Now,
interesting.
You know, like how much cues he was getting and how much just like shooting the shit he was, I don't know, because I mean, it's not that obvious with any other company or anything I've seen, you know, where like the ring announcer's just talking nonstop on the headset. But it was good to get confirmation. I want to give a shout out for Drew getting to the bottom of that case. So we get an ovation. There was a big like ovation when the guy got taken out, and Bobby played it off as the crowd cheering for Savage, which was kind of desperate. He was like, listen to the crowd cheer for the Macho Man, when it was clearly the guy getting kicked out of the arena. Tony acknowledges they don't know what happened to Kamala, and then Zodiac misses a middle rope elbow smash, and Savage hits the big elbow really quickly to win. This was, I don't even think this was 2 minutes. We're talking like a minute and a half here. I went a quarter star.
Yeah, the opening brawl is feisty, and the crowd is like super into Macho. The Kamala comments are like the highlight of the match. Bobby just shitting all over him. And then, yeah, the elbow was good too. So, yeah, I went a quarter star. It was whatever. It serves a purpose. Savage's arm's fucked up, and now he's going to hopefully fight Luger if Luger can survive maybe.
Right. Gene shields the hotline. He then does an interview with Johnny B. Bad. You know, pretty decent. No, generic stuff from Johnny B. Bad, but it wasn't horrible. Do you have anything to add on that?
No, pretty basic.
Okay, then we get our third match, which is Kurosawa. Kurosawa's been in a lot of kind of random matches.
Yeah,
between Nitro and pay-per-views. So we get Kurosawa versus Hawk here, and they kind of finishing up their feud.
Mm-hmm.
Hawk starts out fast. We have some stiff shots and clobbering. Kurosawa misses a clunky elbow from the top, and Hawk sends him to the floor, which was a nice bump off that. And then Hawk gives a flying clothesline from the apron to Corner Rock Parker. But Kurosawa, you know, he missed the ring post on a kick on the Nitro, but here he's able to get up from behind Hawk and smack him off the ring post. So I don't know if they were playing off that or not, but I enjoyed it, kind of the continuity. And then back inside, Kurosawa does a crucifix slam and pins him with his foot on the ropes and help from Parker. So it's not completely clean.
Still a big win.
But yeah, I mean, Hawk takes a pin, which is something you don't see every day. And I don't think the crowd was ready for it, because they seemed kind of shocked that Kurosawa wins. So I was really surprised that Kurosawa won here. This was another quickie match. I think a few minutes, like 3 minutes, ended up going a star, but I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was, but, I didn't think it was long enough to really be much of anything other than an impressive victory for Kurosawa.
And the K train's rolling on. yeah, this feud, of course, when Kurosawa broke Hawk's arm way back. So,
right.
I was good. Like, Hawk was real fired up. He gets a nice tight neck breaker off the top. He's super intense. Bobby makes a joke about a fat girl, and Tony just fucking dies. Like, he is laughing his ass off. He can't control himself. Hawk had a nice clothesline on Parker, too, to knock him off the apron.
I
like this. I thought it was really cooking, too, right before the finish was kind of abrupt. Like, I kind of wish they got, like, maybe 3 or 4 extra minutes.
Yeah.
I thought this was one of Hawk's better singles matches that I've seen out of them. You know, I know his peak stuff with Flair and all that, but like outside of that, like I thought this was pretty good. I had a lot of energy. I actually went 2 stars, but I've been quite the Kurosawa mark of late. So I think he's been one of the brightest spots we've seen a lot on WCW. So definitely digging him, and I liked the energy and aggression in this.
Yeah, I mean, Hawk doesn't have a big repertoire of single matches that are very good. So, I mean, this would probably be a highlight. And I agree with you. I mean, I think would, you know, if this was given like 7 minutes at the pace they were going, they could have fleshed it out a little bit, and it could have been a good match for sure.
Yep.
Then we get a crazy coked out Macho promo. He is looking like wild and paranoid, talking about the match with Luger. You know, just, I mean, this is kind of Macho's character that we've seen. Just a madman. And he lived up to the billing tonight.
Yeah, says he can separate business from friendship. See if Hogan can beat him in the ring. And then he tells Gene his mustache is crooked. And Gene says Savage's beard is off. Your mustache is crooked.
Yeah, he was kind of all over the place. And that, I mean, that one thing you can say about this show is it zips along. Because we're already to our fourth match of the night, which is Mr. JL versus Sabu. It's kind of a repeat of a Nitro match they had. The original Sheik is out with Sabu, of course, in Detroit. So that was kind of a good nod to history there. And we have a very short match, but again, this I think also was less than 5 minutes. But Sabu really goes for broke in this match. He gets a hot start, hits the Ace Moonsault to the outside that takes out both Sheik and JL.
Mm-hmm.
Some stuff has kind of botched here and there, but I did think this with Sabu kind of leading the charge, it looked reckless, entertaining, and somewhat state of the art. So I give him a pass, and there wasn't any, like, you know, horrendous botches.
Mm-hmm.
There's just some sloppiness mixed in. But like I said, only a few minutes long, Sabu ends up winning with Ace Moonsault. So, I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was, but this was another match that probably could have been fleshed out and maybe could have been a good match. But to me, it was just kind of too short to get there, and it was spotty. But I enjoyed the spots we saw, so ended up going 2.25.
Yeah, I went 2 on this. So we both had it a quarter star lower than the TV match. So we both liked the TV match better.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago, Bobby wonders if JL stands for just a loser comes out.
I did notice that. That was good.
The high risks and the botches come with Sabu. That's just what it is. You know what I mean? So, like, you just accept it. Like, that's part of the art of his matches. So they never bother me at all. I like JL's powerbomb. That was nice. And I like the finish, like all the high-impact moves leading to the into the end. Sabu does kind of win out of nowhere, and then you get the spot with the fireball, of course. So fine spot fest, a notch below Nitro, but still a cool spectacle that they can throw out there. So,
yeah, I mean, Sabu in front of the Detroit crowd, it was a nice homage to his family history too. Then we get another crazy promo from the Dungeon of Doom. I mean, you know, there's just nothing to say. It's
Sullivan! Same as
the week before. Yeah, I mean, just. I mean, illogical. You can't decipher it. It's just a bunch of screaming nonsense from. I mean, what actually was his moniker? The father? I mean,
I think
what
it's
was
the
his?
Father. Yeah.
Okay. Because I mean, I in my notes I just write King Curtis, but that's not. They didn't acknowledge that. But yeah, just a bunch of nonsense here.
Sullivan, why are you so short?
Even more nonsense. So, and I was going to ask you, do you know, like, was the monster truck stuff pre-taped or?
I think it may be in some of the feedback I believe that we got to read later from our listeners. I think it was like 3 days before or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was wondering that because as you see, Hogan like hops around a lot.
Yeah.
Because here he is in the back. He gets the presentation of the Harley. Now, why he cares about this right before his world title?
He's Dark Hogan. What's he care about though? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And then the lady at one point during this presentation says, "We also got you a package of sweatshirts." Who the fuck? I mean, like.
A package of sweatshirts.
I mean, come on.
Are they like Harley sweatshirts, though? Like, this, like,
I don't know.
It's kind of like a fashion thing, right?
I just thought that was so, like, low. I mean, that's something, like, I would win from a local radio raffle, you know, at a car dealership or something. It's like, you think Hogan really cares about a package of sweatshirts? But
I like how he's, like, dark evil Hogan, and here he is. But he does say this is going to give him an extra edge tonight.
Yeah, the package of sweatshirts, I guess, made the difference. The motivation he needed.
The contest winner looked like Jerry O'Connell's fat, pasty, ugly brother. I thought
he did kind of look like that. This was quite a crew, with Jimmy Hart, of course, just hanging out.
Dark Jimmy.
Yeah. And that leads us to Ming versus Lex Luger. Now, I'm kind of a Luger apologist, but I struggled with the Lex tonight with his two matches. I did not think this was his best night.
Well, it's a big rematch from 925, this one. Remember, yeah, and Ming beat him clean on that one.
And I mean, that one was quick, but for what it was, I didn't think it was awful. This is long. They should have took some time from this match and gave it to the other ones. Because this is a lot of punching and kicking. Bobby at one point said Oakland could have a set of hair by Thursday, which is a pretty good line. Ming gets sent to the outside. The crowd comes alive a bit. But, I mean, this is like we're 5 or 6 minutes into the match, and all we have is kind of punching, kicking, basic brawling. Luger's on offense for a bit. Nothing interesting. And those there, Luger tries a back suplex. Ming flips over and drives down into Luger. Then he gets a shoulder breaker and gains control, but I didn't think Ming followed up with anything. I thought he'd keep going after the arm, but he doesn't really. He's not very focused. Luger's on the outside in front of Sullivan. Sullivan doesn't attack. The commentators kind of do a good job of playing that up on commentary. And then we get a kind of tease for the future as Tony brings up Bobby being at an event with a man from Japan. And Bobby's like, no, don't worry about that. That has nothing to do with WCW. Don't worry about that at all. That, of course, sets up Starrcade with Mr. Sonny Ono eventually.
The Luger referee makes, from the big
martial arts match. Right. That's when they planted the seed together. Luger makes a comeback and is going to rack Ming, but Ming hits Luger with a spike that he retrieved from his boot. He looks to have the cover in hand, but Sullivan comes in and kicks Luger. That gives Luger the DQ win, so he will face Macho. Kind of an odd ending, a pretty bad ending after 13 minutes of a match, and then Ming and Sullivan argue. So, again, there's a lot of ambiguity as to whether Luger's joining the Dungeon of Doom or kind of what the purpose is of what Sullivan's doing. Overall, with this match, I just didn't like it. I thought it was too long, too punch-kicky, no focus, no intensity. I ended up going star and a quarter. I was pretty tough on this match.
Yeah, I mean, I went too. I didn't mind some of the Ming offense. Like, I like the way he uses his weight and really leans on Lex a lot and batters him, kind of smothers him. I like the suplex battle on the apron. I thought that was pretty good. I like the near fall when Ming falls during the back suplex on top of Luger. And then the gold, you know, Ming hits a gold spike. The finish was interesting to me. It on the surface, the DQ kind of sucks, but I do like the layers because, yeah, you're like, is Luger turning or are they just trying to, you know, let Luger get his ass kicked for a while by Ming and now force him to wrestle again against Savage, like kind of punishing both enemies of the dungeon. So, like, I kind of got it. Like, I didn't mind that part of it. so, yeah, it was fine. It was definitely plotting, but I thought the storyline pieces of it were fine and Ming's. Some of his offense was okay. So I went 2 stars on that.
Then we get a interview with the Giant in his monster truck gear. How much do you think it costs to like custom make that? Because I assume they did not have just a size hanging off the rack.
Yeah, all of it, I don't know. I mean,
to fit Big Paul. Yeah, and I mean, these trucks, like, right. I mean, I would... I'm interested. I need to read the Observer because, I mean, I would assume they just put, like, the body, the custom body on
the decal,
two trucks.
Yeah, some kind of decals or whatever.
Yeah, but, I mean, it feels like that'd be easy enough to replace. I mean, they come off every show anyway. Right. So, feels like they could have just done that and not actually had to purchase the trucks. But, I mean, this whole production overall was pretty expensive and everything about it. It's kind of interesting just from a cost standpoint. And I think that leads us into our feature tag match.
Yeah.
This is one I was looking forward to. So we get Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman versus Sting and Ric Flair. Flair does not come out. He's still injured.
By the way, Giant had a line in that promo. If Hogan lives, he'll get the beating of his life. So it's threatening to kill him, basically.
A lot of killing going on in this feud in the lead up to it. So Sting comes out and goes at it alone. We want Flair chant start up with the early mat work. The opening bit of this I loved, where like Sting constantly gets the advantage on Pillman and Arn, and they regroup. Arn is so good at this with whoever his partner is, like doing the regroup and huddling and trying different stuff. And all sorts of shit. It's always great. I thought there was a really cool spot where, you know, Orange trying to duck down to do that sneak attack on the outside, and Sting knows it's coming, ducks, and hits two clotheslines on both of them. And, you know, Tony's really, like, putting Sting over the top, and Bobby says, "What, did you co-sign for a house with the guy?" That was pretty funny. Big power slam by Sting onto Pillman, and then Sting crotches Pillman and launches him into the guardrail. So this is all Sting for probably the first 5 minutes.
Yep.
But, of course, you knew it was going to happen. The heels end up taking over, and they really take it to him once they take over. And as soon as they start taking over, here comes Flair out to a big pop.
In his dress pants.
He's in his street clothes. He's got the dress pants, the loafers, the black shirt on. He rips the shirt off. He's being held back by Randy Anderson. So that's two people Randy Anderson's fended off in the show. Fans.
And he's all bandaged up, too.
Right. Got the big bandage on his head. He tries to come in with his shoe, but gets pushed away. The rocket launcher gets Sting gets his knees up, so it looks like there may be a hot tag, but it's just a cutoff.
I like the line, too. Tony talks about Flair's retirement at Halloween Havoc last year. Bobby says, "Halloween Havoc ruins people." odd statement.
I didn't catch that, but yeah, that's pretty good. Arn gives a belly to back. I thought there's a fun moment here, which makes sense with what happens in the future, where Sting is in the corner and could make the tag, but Flair is chasing Pillman around ringside. So, like, he could have had the tag then, but, you know, he was chasing Pillman, which, with what happens, that makes a lot of sense. Like, it's actually a spot that's very clever in retrospect. We get another great cutoff with Arn doing the spine buster. Arn hooks on a little, like, a cross leg submission, and we get some quotes from Sting. He's yelling for Rick, and Flair on the outside is like, "I'm here, buddy. I'm here." So
and the crowd was nuts for that comeback that got cut off by the spine buster. Like, they were fucking ballistic.
Yeah.
Before they got cut off.
They keep building it up.
Yeah, they're doing it well, and I liked Flair strutting on the apron too during that part.
So Sting fights back. He knocks both Arn and Pillman's heads into each other. He crawls, he stands up, he barely makes the tag to a huge pop. Flair comes in, struts, and then immediately punches Sting, which is so awesome. I mean, just that whole, like, 20 seconds where you realize what's going to happen, where he comes in, does his strut, does his, like, jump up in place, you know, and then immediately just punches Sting.
It's great. The execution was so good. Sting just gets waxed the whole match. Yes. Turns around just to get punched in the fucking face.
Oh, and I love Sting's reaction to this. Like he realizes he's been turned on. He, like, sees red and just goes, like, eight for a second until the numbers game catches up to him. You know, Tony's losing his shit on saying it was a lie, screaming that. Bobby's loving it, laughing, and just completely yucking it up. So they beat down Flair after the match. So I guess we can then they just give a promo basically saying, you know, the Four Horsemen are back together.
Yeah, it's vintage Flair too. Yeah, it's real vintage Flair in the promo. Arn says the fans wished for the, you know, the Horsemen. They got
right.
kind of thing. But yeah, I like the post match is great. I mean, Sting's just maniacal because he predicted it this time. So, like, you know, he's dumb Sting, but he knew it could be coming this time. Like, he kept talking, "If you fuck me, I'm gonna kill you." And after the match, you know, after he turns on him, he's just maniacal going after him, and then just gets fucking wrecked by the Horsemen. I thought the match was great. The storyline is great, and the execution is perfect. Where do you think, like, storyline wise, Does the plan come together for Flair to go back with the Horsemen? Because the turn seems real, right? Because him and Arn have the falling out in the fight. So it's, you know, they've had a bunch of matches. Like, when in this whole story do you think they decided to reconcile?
Yeah, I mean, I want to see if there's any follow up to that, because I think they could have bridged and made Pillman the bridge.
Right.
And say, like, he brought them together. And then what they end up doing with Benoit joining, like, that could be a focal point, too. Because, you know, they're presenting Benoit as, like, this new prospect, the way he came out of a limo and all this. So, you know, like, they could have first had Pillman, like, I wish they'd have done, like, some flashback vignettes or something like that.
Yeah.
Where you could have seen, like, Pillman bringing them together and saying, you know, oh, these, you know, you guys need to come together. And it's like, you know, the Horsemen used to be a dominant faction. And it can be that again. And, you know, now you have me on their side. And, hey, there's this new guy, Benoit, that, you know, I think he's Horseman material. You know, I mean, there's ways to do it that I think would make sense. Because it's just like brothers kind of fighting. I mean, it's right. Essentially kind of how Brett and Owen come back together a little bit in 97.
Right, but that kind of plays
that
out
on TV. That was such a
TV.
Long feud. Yes.
Well, and it plays out. It's not like this is like subterfuge, right? So like when, because they've been going at it so much. So it's just, you know, you wonder when it was coming. Like when
well,
was
now is that the Brett and Owen, I mean, we'll get to it. But I do feel like that was kind of supercharged where it was only a couple weeks and then. They're cool.
It wasn't even, it was one night.
Oh, so it's even condensed. So, yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
It's
so,
just one night. He comes out, Brett
oh, yeah,
comes out
says,
and
like,
stops him from fighting.
Stop arguing. Yeah, that's yeah. Right. Yeah. Breaks it up. Yeah. Yeah. So, but you do actually see the reconciliation, I guess, there. Whereas right. Here, you don't know when this happened.
Correct.
In time. Like, yeah. what moment did they decide that?
And I guess that was my long way of asking, like, did it take away from you at all? Like that, like when did Flair decide to fuck
a little bit, in? Just because, I mean, I thought the Flair Arn match was so good at mm-hmm. Fall Brawl, and this is an angle is good, and this is a turn on Sting is much better than the 1990 turn.
Right.
In my opinion. But from my kayfabe sense, there is a little bit lost. Like, you can kind of sort of thread the pieces together in your mind, but they didn't do a great job, like, explaining that clearly
right.
On TV. And that's, I think, the biggest problem.
Yeah, and we'll see if they do. But so anyway, the turn is great. I mean, even though it was obviously telegraphed, I mean, it was pretty clear Flair was going to turn on him. It was just, I like that Sting kind of knew this time. I'm glad they didn't make Sting so dumb that he just fell for it again. Like, he basically kept saying, you're probably going to screw me, I know it. And I'm going to kill you when you do.
And this, I mean, this may have been a power play by Flair, too. Just because, I mean, at the Observer, you know, it said plans could change, but it's not the plan for Sting to be turned right. On. So who knows who was feeding him that. But, I mean, it's something they could have changed. Because, I mean, Flair obviously liked being a heel better mm-hmm. Throughout his career. And he probably thought, like, you know, he had one more really big run, so.
Well, he's probably looking at the pecking order. You got Hogan, you got Sting, you got Savage, Luger
right.
At the moment. Like, you know, like,
right.
All of a sudden he's like fourth or fifth on the depth chart as a face. Whereas a heel, you know, he's behind the Giant, like the Horseman, probably number two, so.
Yeah. So I ended up going 3 3/4 for the match. But very, very good match and extremely entertaining. I think it holds up. What happens now?
Did I get my grade? I went 3 3/4 too.
Okay, so yeah. We're the same. All right, cool. So interviews Luger here. This was some more kind of basic hype. They did a lot of backstage interviews, mm-hmm. And besides the Macho one, I didn't think any were awful, but none were very memorable.
Yeah, none really stood out.
It was kind of weird.
We're not going to call that a hidden gem, right, because that's pretty well known.
No, yeah, I don't think that's a hidden gem, because that's kind of the marquee match mm-hmm. of the show. Then we get the big video package showing the Giant and Hogan feud. Bischoff is now out with Bob Chandler, who's the creator of Bigfoot and who designed these trucks.
Yep.
And then we go to the back for the big sumo battle, or to the top, I should say, of Cobo Hall. Hogan doesn't even know the rules. It's like they're getting ready to go in, and he's like, all right, brother, calm down. Let's hear the rules to this thing.
I need to understand. Let me pay attention. Yeah.
And it looked like Dick Slater was the referee here. It wasn't him, but it was somebody who looked just like him.
And they have a whole cadre of police and Donut Dillinger
yeah,
is out
yeah,
there as well.
And so like Dillinger, this kind of showed that this was pre-taped because Dillinger just had like took care and helped Sting, and now he's on the roof all of a sudden
right,
of Cobo Hall. Now I did think so. This may be controversial, mm-hmm. but. I do actually think the monster truck part of this is really cool. And I don't know if it's just because I've kind of gotten into monster trucks.
Right.
or what, but I actually think, like, as a concept, the actual monster truck portion of what we see here is not a bad idea. Maybe it's something they could have done, like, on another pay-per-view where they didn't wrestle immediately afterwards. I think that would have been better. Or even for a Nitro, I think this would have been a cool selling point.
Right.
For a Nitro. But so they weld the both trucks together. There's two charges. I thought the aerial footage looked pretty nice because you could see, like, the city landscape in the back. Looked kind of cool. And basically, they kind of go at it, and we're told there's co-pilots in the truck, so that explains, like, they're definitely not driving these things.
Right, yeah, they're just yelling out the window.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was probably, like, maybe a minute or two too long. But,
yeah, that's what I was going to say, and Bischoff's, like, eating the shit up, like, he's loving it the whole time, I thought the insight by the guy you mentioned that built the trucks was cool.
Yeah, Chandler. Yeah.
Yeah, and in a spectacle way, I agree with you. It was kind of neat. Like, it was entertaining. It did feel, like, unique and different and big, but it definitely goes too long. Like, it should have been quick and to the point. Like, the last 2 minutes just drag. It keeps going. I thought it was going to end pretty quick, which I was hoping for, and that would have been cool. Because it's like, all right, boom, we get the image, we get the spectacle, the battling. Like, all right. 45 seconds and out. You know what I mean? Like that's good. We didn't need, like, a 3-minute fucking monster truck battle on top of the roof. So anyway.
Well, I like the teases, and then when Hogan wins, it actually gets cheered. I mean, overall, I'd kind of put this, like, in the same vein as, like, a Lion's Den match or something like that. Like,
yeah.
In a weird kayfabe sense, it's like a specialty. Like, I don't think this was wrestle crap in my mind.
No, I don't think
so. The actual monster truck portion. Now, what happens after that is indeed.
Correct. Yes.
So Giant loses. He gets out of the truck all pissed off. He stalks Hogan. They fight on the roof of Cobo Hall. Then Giant goes off the roof. Bischoff, I mean, I know you're not familiar with the Ring of Honor, but Gabe Sapolsky was the announcer on Ring of Honor. And when there was this dangerous, when there, you know, it was a big move on those DVDs, he'd always yell, "Dangerous!" You know, it became like a meme.
Right.
Bischoff yelling, "No!" reminded me of that. I mean, it's just like as screechy as he can be. He yells no. They immediately cut back to the announcers.
Well, then Hogan is freaking out and calling for help. I thought he was dark. I thought he was Dark Hogan. Not so fucking dark anymore. He's been talking about killing this man for like a month. And he literally finally kills him. And then he's fucking all upset about it.
That is true. Then immediately Hogan's like, oh, no, brother. Oh,
yeah,
no,
he's been talking about murdering him for weeks. And he fucking throws him off the side of a building. And now he's all fucking upset.
I love the shot, though, when we come back to the announcers and you got Bob Chandler. The creator of Bigfoot, who just is like, what am I supposed to say to sell this complete?
Get Megalodon
bullshit
out here!
I mean, he don't know what to say. Bobby does his infamous line where he says, like, where did he fall? What side of the building? And Bischoff says, it was the roof on one side, a lake on the other. What's the difference? And Bobby flips his pen. Like, apparently was legit pissed at Bischoff over that. So this was garbage. I mean, I don't know what else. This is crap for sure.
Yeah.
Just so campy. I mean, literally, the Giant is falling from the roof of a building is what we're led to believe.
They should have done something like where he smashes the truck against a wall or something. You know what I mean? Like where it's
like
a car accident.
Well, they kept saying like they had those charges on the monster truck arena. So I don't know. I do think I defended the monster truck thing, so I don't want to sound hypocritical, but it is always like, I mean, and this was really probably the first example of this to this degree. Maybe Hogan going into the Dungeon of Doom in the mini movies, but I mean, this kind of set the template for what we'd see with the WWF later on, like, you know, Austin getting ran over, Goldberg and the Hummer. Survivor Series 2000, like all this shit we see later on of just ridiculous kind of monster movie productions of it blurs the line too much, and it takes you out of like a wrestling reality to where you can't foreseeably, I mean, nobody's believing this guy literally fell from the building, you know? Right. So where do you go from here? Like the only logical thing is to say you never see the guy again, but we know that's not going to happen. So
that would have been quite the storyline if they just wrote him off like that.
That would, I mean, that actually would have been like ballsy and cool to a degree.
They should have had the father be the one that got thrown off and then you never see him again.
Right. I mean, because again, you know, like, I mean, you know, probably the main event of this pay-per-view is not going to be canceled. And at the very least, you know, the Giant's not completely done. So when they come back to the announcers and they're trying to sell the gravity of everything, it just feels so hollow because it's like, well, this is just completely preposterous, you know? Like, I mean, it's unbelievable. So that's that. And I mean, we continue to talk about it. I mean, we go straight from that to Luger versus Savage, where Tony comes back on commentary and is still talking about it. Now this match had been built up a lot.
Oh yeah, really well built.
And,
yeah.
And I was very disappointed in the end result.
Savage gets Luger, a huge pop too.
Yeah, I mean it felt like okay, this could be a big time match. These two just don't seem to have any chemistry with each other.
Yeah.
This reminded me of that is it sold out 98 or 99? Mm-hmm. I think it's 98. Yeah, it's 98. They're the main event after Flair versus Hart.
Right, and which I didn't even remember until I watched it like last year. Like I always thought Flair right. Hart was the last match.
Right, this was kind of like that too, where it's just sort of a nothing match, and it really shouldn't have been. Luger offers a handshake, but Savage fires away. Jimmy Hart comes out, dressed in all black. Another very punch kick heavy match. I just didn't feel like the hate was there, and I didn't think the crowd during the match was as hot as it could be. I don't know if that was from the Cobo Hall debacle or what the deal was. It just never came together. And then Luger ends up pinning Savage, but Hart is distracting Nick Patrick, which is kind of a weird spot, is what happens later on in the night. And eventually Luger gets sent into Jimmy Hart, and Savage hits the elbow to win. So that does get a nice pop, but I thought this was really disappointing given the build. This is probably the most disappointing WCW match I've watched over the course of the podcast. Mm-hmm. Maybe the most disappointing match overall, to be honest, just given the build. So I only went a star on this. I was just pretty let down by this one.
Yeah, I went a star and a quarter. I was let down by the Nitro match, too, remember, with these two. Like, I was hyped for that, and I got let down. So, yeah, it happens again here. And I think they're almost overdoing Savage's arm. Like, I appreciate the selling and the injury, but it almost hinders things. And I think it was maybe too much. Like, looking at everything on this card, and how they end up shorting the stuff. Like, I think they should have just not done the qualifier stuff and just eliminated those two matches, which were useless, and just given these guys like 12 minutes and let them just tell a full story instead of doing the three matches. Or just have Savage, I don't know. Well, I guess Luger hadn't turned yet. I was going to say do some kind of gauntlet. I don't know. May just have them fight and then Ming and Zodiac come out and beat them up after or something. Like, there was another way they could have done it. Instead of putting three shit matches, they could have probably just had these guys go a little bit longer and be better. The finish is really confusing and awkward, as is most of this. I like Tony saying that Bischoff sprinted to the back after the monster truck incident, though. Picture him running down the hallway. Sluggish and disappointing, really confusing overall. So, yeah, it sucked after all the build that we got that, but I think we're going to get more from them, so maybe they'll turn it around. But so far, yes, the chemistry has not been good.
Yeah, I guess we'll see going forward, but yeah, this is disappointing, for sure. Bobby's still yelling at Tony, wanting to know what the hell's going on. He stomps off the set. And that leads us into Michael Buffer introducing the main event. And we get a somber Hulk Hogan coming out.
Yes, very dark.
But yeah, he dark grabs enough. The mic.
He's mourning the murder.
Exactly. Grabs the mic, says he didn't want Giant to take the plunge. Wasn't supposed to be that way, brother. And then all of a sudden, who should emerge looking fresh as a daisy but the Giant led by Kevin Sullivan? So, I mean, God.
And Hogan's not even dressed to wrestle. Bobby calls that.
No, Hogan's wearing, like, these weird boots, like, like cowboy boots. And
And he shoots when he says it, too. He said, what happened up there wasn't supposed to happen.
Like, right.
Doing the whole, like, you know, work.
It's like, this is off script, yeah. So, I mean, how preposterous. I just can't get over that they literally booked this guy to fall off a building and then 20 minutes later, not only, you know, recover from that.
And look fine, yeah.
Change into his gear, because Giant is in his gear.
Yeah.
So he shredded the monster truck uniform, now is in his gear, and is ready to go. Ready to.
And they're not even trying to explain it away. Like, they don't even say, oh.
No, I mean, they just.
Like, the dungeon was prepared. They had a crash pad below or something. You know, like something, right?
Yeah, I mean, they just say, like, oh, he's inhuman. And, I mean, okay, well. You can only take it. And I love Buffer, like, as soon as he comes out, he just says, the challenger has arrived.
He's alive.
Oh, my God. Hogan's reaction to this is so fake looking, where he looks like he's seen a ghost. He's just, you know, aghast that the Giant comes out.
Oh, yeah, he's all thrown off. He's sorting it out on the floor.
Complete cheese ball Hogan here.
And it's backwards, too, because, and like I said, my son was even picking up on it when it was happening. Like, Giant is kind of the face. He, like, survived attempted murder. Hogan's kind of the dick who killed him, basically. You know, he's out here. And then the worst part is he's got Sullivan's paint on as he's, like, trying to be even more evil. Like, oh, I'm going to show you how evil I am. I have your paint on. And he makes that big, like, face, like, ah, I got you, when he takes off the fucking, you know, when he reveals. I just, oh, God, I hate it all.
He's like, I didn't understand.
Ah, I have your paint on, Kevin. Take that.
I wrote a note for that. Like, I could not understand what was so great. That was so dumb, because it was almost like Holt thought, like, that was, like, the way Sullivan gets power. I don't know. It's
lame mind games. And, like, the face he makes to the crowd, like, hey, guys, look at me. He's just so fucking cheesy. He's like, look at me. I got Kevin's paint on. Fucking Kevin. You know, he's like, I don't know. It's like so fucking lame. He's like, we got you.
This was definitely bad. I mean, we'll get to the crowd reaction at the end, but.
I feel like the failed Dark Hogan stuff explains the racism later. It's like he's just so mad that he failed at being, like, dark, that he then hates everything that's dark later. I don't know. I don't get it.
I mean, I don't know. This felt like one of the worst Hogan performances, though, where because Flair's always going to get cheers. But, like, right. I mean, the Giant is a heel's heel. I mean, he's a Giant. Mm-hmm. He's been presented as a heel and all that. And this feels like one of the first times where, I mean, maybe with Sid and Rumble 92, but, I mean, it's like, okay, let's look at this from the outside looking in. This is a guy literally in his first match, and he's getting babyface cheers against Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Like, how effed up is that? Like, it's just, you know, something needs to change here. But let's get to the match. Giant dominates the first portion.
He's really possessed, too, just choking and chopping like a madman.
Yeah. I mean, it's decent big guy offense. It is his first match, so, I mean, he's not as refined as he would be, but... Again, for his first match in a main event of traditionally probably their second or third biggest show of the year, pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know, not terrible. He misses a leg drop. Hogan comes back. I like the comeback from Hogan. And he does get a big pop when he clotheslines Giant out of the ring.
Oh, yeah, that's the biggest pop of the match. The crowd loved that.
That's probably the most vulnerable we've seen the Giant so far up to that point.
We get more Andre stuff from Bobby, too, in here, by the way. That's still going. Yes. And then he talks about how much Hogan has changed pushing the
right, stuff. Right. Yeah, Bobby. Well, Bobby's weird on this show where he's like, he's so over the top on everything. And it's like, from a kayfabe sense, okay, I mean, he's selling it. But, like, everything on this show is a 10.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, just laughing is much as he could when Flair turned on Sting, you know, saying, you know, when after the Flair promo, he's just, you know, he's ecstatic, and just all throughout this angle, he's just all the WrestleMania 3 callbacks and everything. Yeah. There's just a lot going on. So I couldn't decide whether I liked it or found it admirable or what, but it's certainly a performance. Like, it's, mm-hmm. I felt like it was a very hammy performance. Right. Kind of.
He's at least engaged. He's at least engaged and into it. So
right,
I give him
right.
That. Yeah.
I mean, he's at least trying to sell what they're trying to sell, but I mean, it's very amplified. So I mean, it's not disinterested, Bobby, like you said. So We can't give him that. After the clothesline, the Taskmaster tries to retreat, but then they head back to the ring. Hogan grabs the Giant, sends him back into the ring. Then we get Giant hits a nice backbreaker and mm-hmm. bear hug. So he starts focusing on the back.
That bear hug goes way too long, though.
I did put it in a note. This is a long bear hug. So that's kind of like our big heat segment of the match, but they milked it for all it was. Hogan hooks up and runs into the choke slam, which that gets a huge face pop for the Giant when he does that. Then Hogan kicks out. He hooks up proper to kind of a mixed reaction.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as big as it usually is. He's able to hit the big boot on Giant, but it's kind of a glancing blow just because he couldn't get his leg up that high. Hogan teases the slam. Now that gets a good pop. This is where Bobby really brings up WrestleMania 3.
Right, yeah.
Giant gets slammed, and then we have the leg drop. And it looks like Hogan's going to get the pin, but what do you know? Jimmy Hart hits Randy Anderson with the title belt.
Which the camera misses, by the way.
Right, right. You can kind of see it out of the yeah. corner, but it's not not very clear what happens. This is his kind of heel turn. He tells Hulk, he's like, oh, I don't know what happened, brother. And then as soon as Hulk turns around, he hits Hogan with the belt, which Hogan no-sells.
Right.
and then he tries to attack Jimmy, but the Giant is back again with the bear hug.
And I thought, we can talk about it for one second. I mean, it was obvious, again, like Flair, that Jimmy was going to turn after all the way they've built it and telegraphed
right,
it.
Right.
But I still think it was a good idea. Like, Jimmy with Hogan was getting, it's done. Like, as it was probably not needed, but it was done. And then I really, he's just better suited as a heel. So I think it was a good idea to do what they did.
And did the wrestling boot band, so.
Yeah,
I was sad. I did like Tony saying, did Jimmy fall off the roof and hit his head? That was kind of a fun line in the middle of all this. Sullivan comes in, adds some shots, and now Jimmy calls for some backup.
Mm-hmm.
So Hogan chants ring out. Savage and Luger come for the save. Savage gets beat down, and Luger stomps on him. So Luger makes his turn. While all this is going on, who makes his way down the aisle but the Yeti?
The Yeti. Tony's just losing his fucking mind.
In all his glory. Oh, it's the Yeti. the Yeti gets into the ring. And, I don't know what you can call it besides him raping Hulk Hogan.
It's a double penetration bear hug.
I don't know what this is.
One's in the front, one's in the back. It's the it's a fuck sandwich, basically.
It is just the worst bear hug I've ever. I mean, him and Giant are literally hugging and sandwiching Hulk.
They give him the Eiffel Tower. They go.
Yeah, Tay is completely humping him. Luger wrecks Hogan, which I thought looked much better. I was tough on legs during his matches. I thought he looked pretty good here. Like, racking Hogan. He racks Savage and all that. So Anderson recovers. He raises the Giant's hand. Buffer says Giant is the winner, but the belt can't change hands on the DQ. Giant grabs the belt, puts the boot to Hogan, and then kind of mimics the hand wave to the crowd. And then Yeti and Giant also do the ass rape to Savage as well. So another, the show ends with a big heel beatdown.
And what did you think of Luger finally turning heel too, basically?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was building up, and mm-hmm. it was probably a good move.
Yeah.
I mean, and as we'll get to it, I like the way they play it off, where he's a heel with everybody but his quote-unquote best friend Sting.
Right, yeah, so there'll be a twist
to it. So that's
a
good
right.
way they do that as well. On one hand, it's good, but it's kind of weird that he's associated with the Dungeon of Doom.
Right.
I think that was kind of a mistake. I don't know how they could have done that where he wouldn't have been, but almost like him and Jimmy kind of going off on their own
mm-hmm.
and that being like a separate thing from right. the Dungeon of Doom, like two separate things, like, oh, Hogan has to beat the Dungeon of Doom and now Jimmy Hart. Kind of like a Paul Heyman client situation where Jimmy recruited Luger.
Yeah.
That would have probably been better. Because it feels weird because, I mean, say what you will, they're presenting the Yeti as this big, like, special attraction.
Right.
And the Giant is still built up big. So Luger, at best, is second in the pecking order on his own faction. And there's still the weird stuff with Sullivan. Like, I mean, I think... I mean, Sullivan to me, too, is kind of... He muddles it up a lot. Where I feel like they used him initially as kind of like a mouthpiece for the Giant and to kind of guide him along the way. But I almost feel like we've seen enough from the Giant now that he could be separate from that. Like, he doesn't need... Like, I don't think Sullivan adds anything here.
Right. No, I would agree. But he's not going away, so...
No, yeah, I mean, we're stuck with him for a while, but it just... It feels weird. So, I mean, this is certainly memorable. I mean, everything from the ending with the Yeti coming out is right. Just... I mean, another one of those, like, you know, if you had to watch the Nitro segment from the last week to see the Yeti emerging, you definitely need to see him come out and performing this bear hug to Hogan.
And it's interesting, too, how they pulled the trigger on all the turns and like, they almost, like, drew the line. Like, this was, it was building, and boom, they just unload them all. Flair turns, yeah, Jimmy turns, yeah. Luger turns. Like, you know, they just kind of got it all out of the way, and now we'll kind of start fresh tomorrow night.
Right. This was a show where they kind of reset everything that's been building since Nitro started.
Right.
I mean, there was a lot that happened here. Giant came back from the dead. The turns, like you said, there was... Yeah, I mean, you had three turns. You had Hart, Flair, and Luger. So three turns throughout the show. Even, I mean, kind of even Kim, too, a little bit. I mean, given the end of Johnny B. Bad.
Yeah.
You know, it showed a tinge of humility from her. So yeah, there was a lot going on in the show. I mean, as far as the main event as a match, like, I ended up going 2 stars. Like, I kept thinking in my head, I was like, ranked Bulldog Diesel that, and I actually don't think this was worse as a match, so I couldn't in good conscience give it lower than that. But I mean, it's kind of weird. I mean, like, as far as your first match of your career, I didn't think it was bad. I thought, like, again, the Giant looked like he was deserved to be in the ring. Like, he wasn't dwarfed by the stature of Hogan.
No.
I mean, now this is Hogan at his absolute lamest, so who knows, but
No, I think he still would have held up presence-wise. I mean, yeah, he has a great look. And
I mean, he's getting face cheers, too. I mean, like, when he gets that choke slam, the crowd's for him.
Yeah.
There's
a great presence, a great look, and he's been booked like a fucking monster.
Well, yeah, I mean. Yeah.
I went 2.25 on this. Maybe because, again, watching my son clouded me, but I enjoyed it. Like, if it wasn't for that bear hug, I think it would have been even better. Like, you know, if they cut that down, if it wasn't as interminable. I think I even maybe go a tick higher, but I don't know. Everything they did made sense. Like, it wasn't bad when you look at on paper. And if you remember the monster truck and the finish, you may think it was bad, but the match itself is solid. And the post-match is memorable too. So, and it's a big deal. I mean, we get the belt off Hogan now. He's been champ since what? July 94. So,
yeah, well, we'll have to see. Like, I don't actually remember the follow up to that. Cause I mean, yeah, like, Giant wins by DQ. So I guess we'll see. Like, I couldn't remember, like, exactly what they said, whether he's, like, out of commission or why he actually has to vacate the belt. So we'll see. That's something to follow.
Yeah,
we'll follow whether that makes sense. Yeah.
All right. Why don't we get to our awards then? Wrap up this show here.
All right. So, match of the night, I think we'll go with Horseman. The tag match, right? Yeah, the Horseman turn and all that. And then for moment of the night, what did you go for that?
I went with the Flair turn.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually a show I think there's a lot of contenders, good and bad. I mean, you got Giant falling off the roof. Like, that's memorable. Yeti coming out, memorable again. And then the Flair turn. I mean, I'll go with the Flair turn just because I loved from the tag when he pops into the promo they cut. But, yeah, I mean, this is a show where – I mean, somebody literally falling off the roof of a building. It's our moment of the night. So,
yeah, the Flair turn is so great. Just the way he does it is so memorable. The turn and the punch.
Your MVP here.
I went with Sting. I loved him in the tag match. I loved the fire after the match. He was just like the best on the night for me. As much as I liked Flair and the Horseman in the post-match promo, to me this was kind of just Sting's. It's just like everything that's been building into this match, and you could just feel his frustration and anger when Flair turned on him. So he had a lot of good emoting going on.
Yeah, I went Sting as well. And, you know, I mean, I think as far as Sting is concerned overall, I'm not the biggest fan of him. for sure. Probably not the biggest detractor, but I'd say I'm on the more detractor side of the spectrum than a fan of his. But I thought he did really good. Yeah, I mean, he created a ton of sympathy for himself. You know, the moniker Sting being an idiot, I don't think that was totally fair here to a degree. I mean,
no, definitely not. Yeah.
Thought it could be coming, and as soon as it does, I mean, I just love him freaking out and said, damn it, I should have known better. You know, it's kind of like that moment where it's almost like a guy that gets back into a bad relationship with a girl that he knows is trouble. You know what I mean? Like, right. If you've
like
been in this.
Cable.
Yeah, this is your Cox cable. Exactly right. Well, you should know better, but yeah, it's happening again. So, yeah, Sting tonight. What did you have for commentary?
So I had a few. Bobby, Santa Kimberly, just do your job and hold up the card, sweetheart. and then the line that made Tony just die is, that sounded like a fat girl sitting on a beanbag. Tony just loses his fucking mind when he says it. It says Bobby for mayor. That was Tony. And then Bobby says, just what I need, a pay cut, a home in a bad neighborhood. Fucking mayor of Detroit. And then the Halloween Havoc ruins people. They're never the same after, Bobby says.
Tony and Bobby are pretty fun together.
I liked them in this whole show.
We
hadn't really
seen
good.
Them, just them two, I don't think. Period. Well, was it just them two for Fall Brawl, or was somebody else hanging in,
was
Dusty
Tanae
or
there?
Something?
Tanae or
Dusty? Yeah, I felt like it was a 3-man booth, but I'm not 100%. But
I can check.
It that. Felt different anyway.
It was. I don't have it listed at the top.
Okay, we didn't get any shots fired.
Nope.
I don't believe. And no debuts, right?
No, nope, it's everything.
Because we'd already seen the Yeti.
But it continues, though. We don't get many shots fired with these because there's really no Bischoff. It's, you know, Tony, and he doesn't do too many until, I think eventually he does, but for a while he doesn't.
Right. And then this got a 0.6 buy rate. So that was not too bad,
yeah.
Not too shabby.
Yeah,
the Fall Brawl got 0.49. So, a little bit of an uptick there, which you would expect for a show like this. So, now, what was your overall grade for Halloween Havoc?
And just as I said, Graham only has Tony and Bobby on commentary at Fall Brawl. So.
Okay. I mean, I definitely remember them from, like, the Flair Orange stuff, and I thought they were very good there. But it may be one of them things where I think somebody may have bounced in for, like, a match or two or something, but I may be misremembering.
Okay. Overall grade, I went with a 6 out of 10.
Okay. Now, what did you grade a Fall Brawl?
I gave Fall Brawl a 6 out of 10.
Okay. So, same for you. Even Steven, I gave Fall Brawl, I think, a 6 out of 10 as well. I gave this one a 5.5. I don't know. I think a lot of times I do value, like, the peaks of a show as
right.
far as in-ring quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think, like, I don't know if I liked the tag match even as good as, like, Bad versus Pillman from Fall Brawl.
No. Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
that's
close.
You have that and Arn Flair. So
Flair Arn, yeah. I mean, I definitely think Flair Arn is the best match.
I think I thought there were less lows on this show, though.
Yeah, I mean, that long tag match was really tough at Fall Brawl.
Yeah.
This was probably had a higher batting average. I mean, although I did think Luger versus Mean was pretty rough, and
I think the main event's more memorable too than War Games.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main event's better.
Yeah,
in some degree.
Yeah,
too than the War Games.
And I really like Tony and Bobby. So yeah, I mean,
they're
close. There's almost like a richer man's In Your House 3 and 4 or whatever, or you know, whatever ones you want to compare. Like where what one has the kind of the bigger, actually, it's probably more comparable. It's like 96 with the Mind Games and Buried Alive, right? You know, like one's kind of a spread out card and one has like the highs.
Right.
So,
right.
But they both kind of even out to like the same grade.
Yeah. I probably actually like this show better, like talking and hashing it out than when I was watching, to be honest. Cause now that I think back, I mean, I don't know. A lot of this is kind of the concept too of what you're watching around the show too, because like I've been watching a lot of Ring of Honor. I've kind of been on a nostalgic kick of Ring of Honor, which is weird to say, but like I was watching a lot of like 2007, 2008 Ring of Honor, which is so like work rate heavy that anything, like even like Bad and DDP, when they rolled out there, it felt like they were in slow motion for a while. I had to kind of get my mind into the time frame for a bit. It was a little jarring. But yeah, I mean, this is a pretty consistent, okay show, I guess, with a couple of high points for sure.
Yeah, I mean, would you say it's the best pay-per-view we've seen so far? Oh, actually, no, I had in here 3 at 6.5, so that's probably the best one.
But yeah, I mean, I feel like they're close. I'm ready for a real good pay-per-view.
Yeah, and well, I think we got
don't
one.
Know,
yeah.
Well, I think Survivor Series has that reputation, but we'll see. Mm.
Well, if it's not that, it might be a while before. Well, Starcade's interesting. We'll see how that holds up.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm not. I can tell you, like, my memory right now is I'm not a big fan of the wild card match. I like the concept, but I wasn't crazy about the match. So we'll see. But yeah, it'd be nice to get a good pay per view. But yeah, I mean, if we don't get it here, I don't know. It may even be like Super Brawl or something.
Right.
I don't know. It's a miles away.
If that. All right, we got some feedback. We want to read that.
Yeah, let's go through that.
All right, Kevin Jeffrey, the Monster Truck Challenge was taped the Saturday night before Havoc. So actually the night before. While standing in line at the Joe Louis Arena, the trucks are being loaded and driven out of the adjacent Cobb Hall roof and parking garage show. Basically, they were leaving while everyone was waiting to go into the show. Our buddy JP, Justin Pratt, says, I'm waiting for the Me Too movement to catch up with the Yeti. It's only a matter of time before that bandaged penis-having son of a bitch gets what's coming to him. Andy Labar checks in. The only time Hawk ever took a fall was to Manabu Nakanishi. Hell yeah. So there you go. Chris Hatley, Ric Flair turning on Sting was one of my favorite heel turns of all time. Our buddy Peter Winston says the monster truck battle wasn't that bad, and I enjoyed it. I've said it. Never felt so free. Will Olson, the death.
Oh, okay. Wait a minute. I revoke saying I like the monster truck battle. Now. If Peter's defending it, it has to be bad.
Most likely.
That's just my vantage point.
All right, Will Olson says, the death, or is it, of the Giant? Is this the biggest no-sell in wrestling history? A dead man wins a title never seen before in history. Never mind, The Undertaker.
Yeah, well, there's the punchline. But yeah, I mean, this is kind of, what a reversal of fortune for the Giant.
You go from dying into winning the championship.
Death to world champion in 20 minutes. Yeah, it'd be like somebody got knocked out in a fight. With a huge concussion, like got saved by the bell or something like that, and they recover him in the corner, and then he ends up winning.
And then you get to bang a dude Eiffel Tower style.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah. The first ever live sex we had. Last week we had the first women's main event, and this was the first live sex celebration.
Oh, boy.
All right, Tim Slomka, the Slump Cat. My favorite WCW pay-per-view, Jennifer Smith. I think this one's up your alley as well. The tag match with Flair is great. Weird that he comes out dress clothes with the crowd is so into it, ready for the hot tag, and then bam, turns on Sting. The opener is really good, too. I love Johnny B. Badd and his, especially his song. Think he has some great matches, but he gets a bad rap. And then Jennifer said, you're right. I've seen this a few times and love it as well, of course. Not a shock. Jay Hinchy wraps it up by saying, the debut of the Yeti and the Monster Truck duel with Hogan and the Giant, plus the heel turn by Ric Flair on Sting, and I believe this is the final or one of the last appearances of Steve Austin in WCW. I think he's off by a year there. That was 94. Interesting night from Detroit on this Halloween Havoc for sure. So there you go. That's our feedback. So thank you, everyone. We'll be doing that for the pay-per-views mainly. I mean, if you feel like you have one for a TV and you want to just post to our Facebook page, which you can follow, facebook.com/PTBN Wrestling Warzone. Like the page for updates and conversation. And if you have feedback on the TV, you can post it there. Otherwise, we'll probably just put threads up for the pay-per-views to gain your thoughts. For now, anyway, we'll see if we get a push for more. We can go beyond that. But facebook.com/PlaceBNation, place number 2, BNation on Twitter. Be sure to check out and sign up on all our feeds, PlaceBNation Wrestling, PlaceBNation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only. We had a new Place to Be podcast that dropped recently, Chad, with Kelly Nelson, looking at the July 88 MSG. And then, plus, like I talked about last week, the Pop Blast looking at Glow, and then plenty of other things to check out on all of our feeds. Really good audio each and every day, just about. We have something dropping, so be sure to check that all out as you move along. And be sure to vote as well. The Greatest Song of the 80s tournament into round 2, so be sure to check that out as those start to drop and get your vote heard as we continue rolling on. We love the engagement there that's been going on. So anything you want to talk about? You good?
No, starting to get into the nitty gritty of the songs. I mean, round 2 is where I think you really have to start making some hard choices, probably, right, of what advances from those group stages.
I agree. It's a lot of fun. We'll see what makes the actual tournament. So, are you enjoying the rehashing the Monday Night War still?
Yeah. Well, like I said last week, like the WWF has been a chore, but right now WCW, it is kind of a interesting vibe of some decent to good wrestling and just some kind of all time cornball angles. So there's kind of a lot going on. So we'll see where it goes. Hopefully the WWF kind of gets out of their doldrums, and then we'll have two semi decent promotions. But we'll see when that happens.
Yeah, I'm digging the project still. Going through this, I think we're catching a lot of forgotten stuff, like even on some of those Raws. So it's just like, you know, last week we talked about Avatar and some of the Ahmed Johnson stuff, and on Nitro some of these forgotten matches. So I think it's cool. I think there's a lot of stuff buried in the shows that we're going to encounter. So it's fun. I'm looking forward to trugging along. And like I said, I think we're starting to come out of the darkness of the WWF. So we'll see.
I guess we'll see with our next show whether we have any Halloween themes.
Yeah,
on the shows the night before Halloween. I know the I did see the screenshot for Raw, and it looks like we're going to have some shenanigans based on the screenshot. So there we go. So,
all right. Why don't we wrap up then? We'll be back on next episode. We'll be looking at, like you just referenced, the 10:30 Raw and Nitro. So we'll get into those and see what the fallout is from Halloween Havoc, how they wrap up the world title situation or escalate it anyway. So for Chad, I'm Jake D. We're out. Everyone, smell that napalm. We'll talk to you next time. Take care.
No!
Ah, Sullivan, my son!